Afternoons on ABC Radio Canberra. Streaming now at abc.net.au/Canberra.
It seems to me in the aftermath of a terrorism incident, everyone immediately wants to know why they did it. How or why were they radicalised? And a religious or political persuasion is often thrown out as a cause, is some pretty early on too, within the first hour. But is focusing on religion or politics sometimes missing the root cause and therefore helping with prevention of some of these attacks? Joining me is Dr. Clark Jones. He's a co-director of the Australian Intervention Support Hub, and that's based at the Regulatory Institutes Network here at the ANU. Can you explain what the Australian Intervention Support Hub is doing? What's your main aim?
Well, we started off, we were working with Deakin University in Melbourne and with the Attorney Generals in the Australian Federal Police as funding, I suppose. We look at a whole range of things. We were looking at training of government agencies. We were looking at the social service provider network that could support intervention or working with kids. Over the last 12 months, we've had a bit of a change of direction. We're doing a lot more community engagement, trying to get an understanding of the cultural and, in a sense, religious issues surrounding young people that might be disengaged, might be involved in violent extremism. And we found that we get a much better picture, a much sort of, it's called participant observation studies. So we get a real feeling for what's happening on the ground. I think that's the only way if we're going to try and develop solutions. And what we found, very much of what you're saying, is a lot of the action, a lot of these kids that are getting involved in violent extremism, it's not religion that's driving this. It's how religion is used as a framing of as a sort of a platform for when they carry out activities. But underlying the issues, there's everything from domestic violence. There's kids who are stuck between two, you know, a generation of where the parents are. Have strict religious observance or even cultural observance. The kids having difficulty knocking on the social door to try and get accepted within their own sort of social environment. And they're sort of stuck between two worlds. It's called torn identity. Mm. Not my theory, but it's something we work with. So there's all sorts of things that are leading this problem, but religion is not one of them, really.
And so, but the link there you're talking about too, which I think is sort of has been blown out of proportion in some areas of the media, but there is a migrant link in the sense that they can come from backgrounds that the parents have come from non-English speaking backgrounds, you're saying, and they're being disenfranchised in a sense?
Oh, they can be. I mean, you've got kids that are totally disengaged, disenfranchised, but you've also got kids that are well and truly connected. And if I can think of the Christmas Day incident down in Melbourne, I actually had some engagement with one of those kids, and it blew us out of the water. We had no idea that sort of thing was coming. So there's situations where it's not necessarily those that are unemployed, that are from the low socioeconomic background. Yes, it is some cases, but not always. There's a whole variation, and that makes it so difficult to try and work in this area to look at the cross-section of kids and what's actually driving this problem.
I called the Martin Bryant, what happened with Martin Bryant in Tasmania, a terrorism attack. Someone pulled me up on that and said that it's not a terrorism attack. Do you look at something like that as a homegrown terror attack? I mean,
I think the word terrorism has been blown all out of proportion, and yeah. I'm the first one, or I was one of a couple of people to say that the Sydney siege was not a terrorist attack, and I certainly look at London as not being a terrorist attack.
Why do you look at London as not being a terrorism attack?
Well, in terms of, well, if we can look at profile alone, I mean the we're looking at people over the age of 50 that have got previous criminal convictions, previous criminal records. The difference is, and this is where I'm highly critical of this area, is that, yes, they're Muslim, but because they're Muslim, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a terrorist act. And we're very to vilify Muslims as and only relate them to terrorism, and that's sort of partly driving the problem. I think we really need to call a spade and get back to some of the call it a criminal act rather than a terrorist act, and I think that would be far more useful.
What about poverty? Because when I look back to the Bali bombings, there was some link. People did come out and say a lot of these youths that were being radicalised came from really poor areas. Is poverty a link in some areas?
Well, we don't have the extreme poverty in Australia, certainly in Southeast Asia, and certainly where I did a lot of my work in prisons in the Philippines and Indonesia. Poverty was a driving force there. We've got kids as young as 15, 16 leaving their farms to join Abis IF or even Jamaa Islamiya because it simply pays more. Kidnapping for ransom pays more. We don't have the same sorts of extremes in Australia, but you do have kids from, I do a lot of work out of, I won't mention the suburbs, I don't think that's useful, but in northwestern Melbourne and southwest Sydney, and there are some areas that and some kids doing it tough. Now, this is where I get a little bit annoyed with radicalisation, because kids are just as likely to turn out, they can be involved in any sort of antisocial behaviour. Obesity is one of the problems. There's a whole list of things, of outcomes that can happen with kids that are vulnerable. The problem with this radicalisation theory, we're sort of pushing them towards that if they're Muslim, they're going to be radicalised. But really the outcomes, and you get on the ground and out in the street, you'll see that the outcomes are totally different. There's more issues in relation to drug and alcohol offending, domestic violence and other antisocial behaviours.
Does putting a religion to it, does that almost give them, I guess, a sense of what they're doing is a holy cause? It gives them some sort of cred in their own mind, I wonder. You know, like, I'm on this bigger mission.
Yeah, I mean, if you're thinking of about attachment, sense of belonging, and they do, kids will look for, if they feel that they're disconnected, they don't feel they belong somewhere, they will seek attachment somewhere. And this is where it's not necessarily towards so-called Daesh or the Islamic State. I mean, it's just as likely to join a street gang. And this is where I think we go wrong. Yes, sometimes it's framed in religion, but we've got to get to the crux of this. It's not religion. That's not what's driving this.
My guest is Dr. Clark Jones. He's a terrorism expert. This idea of the loner, it seems to me that this is often played out in terms of one of these big, it's mass murder. Let's call it what it is. It's mass murder. So if we look at Martin Bryant in Tasmania, we look at what happened in Norway, and we look at what's been happening recently in Europe, some of these attacks. Often they're painted as a lone wolf to start, but also as a loner, someone who didn't have a lot of friends. Is this something that we just play on in the media, or is this rooted in some sort of fact?
Oh, they're certainly lone acts. Sometimes they're involved in negative social circles, and they've got other kids in their area or in their school that have similar sort of ideas or similar sort of understandings. But when we talk about lone actors, and we're talking about, if you can think about some of the mass shootings in the United States, for example, we're talking about kids that are really struggling. Their frustrations are playing out in these acts. This is their last desperate act. And I think that's the sign of the times, pressures in society, not coping, or they lack the critical thinking skills. And when they've got those sorts of vulnerabilities, some kids will run off the rails. And I think with a sign of the times, it's a real sign that there's pressures out there. And I'm wondering whether the current political commentary in relation to far-right beliefs and which is playing out and legitimising racism and legitimising discrimination, I think we're asking for trouble in that direction.
I do wonder too if by repeatedly calling out a religion like Pauline Hanson does, if repeatedly tying it to a religion like Islam, if you are then, as you say, isolating those people and almost giving them more of a sense of injustice and more of a sense of wanting to take the power. Mike from Hawker, how much radicalisation is caused by the government's reaction to terrorism? Overreaction can justify feelings of isolation. What do you think about that?
Look, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I was just amazed by the political commentary after the London attack, and calling it an attack on democracy. And I can't remember the words that Malcolm Turnbull used, but that's just really overplaying the situation. And you know, getting back to your point about Pauline Hanson, I mean, there's got to be tougher stance on. I mean, has she ever met a Muslim person? I suppose she's met one or two, but you know, get out there and get to know some people. You know, get an understanding before you make these comments. I can't say more.
I think she might have gotten to a heated debate with a few on Q&A, and I also think, I'm trying to remember, but a few have invited her to eat with them, but I don't think she's taken them up on that offer. On the SMS as well, we've got the vast majority of perpetrators. This is from Jill. This is not me saying this for listeners. The vast majority of perpetrators of terrorist acts, mass murder, are men. The vast majority of religious leaders are men. The gender that is mowing people down, blowing people up, or shooting people at people is men. What are we doing about that? I think there are women also, Jill, involved in terrorism. I think you can just... one of the US attacks recently, it was a male and a female that did it. But I take your point that the majority, at least in the Western attacks, I don't think we can necessarily say the same for all the way around the world. Are men more susceptible to get involved in these types of things, to be radicalised?
Oh, certainly. You see a lot more men acting out in violence, in crime more generally. Really, there's a lot more men involved in crime than there are in women. But people might argue against me on that. I haven't really done a study, but I have got a student at the moment that's doing a study on the role of women in extremism, and I'd be interested to see how that sort of plays out. But it's a fascinating area and a very good point she raises.
Mental health, is that a factor, mental health? I mean, I assume some of these people are perfectly sane, though.
Oh, look, certainly. And some make quite rational decisions. I mean, if you think about Jake Bilardi, he documented his sort of lead into terrorism and why he went overseas. Quite intelligent, quite educated. So, but mental health does feature in a number of incidents, and it's something that when the government did raise it, it was an important thing to raise. However, let's not push that into national security. It's not a security. It is a security problem in the counterterrorism sense. But at the end of the day, the solutions, we've got to look at the social issues and treat it more as care and intervention and support, rather than incarceration. I mean, if we could keep on pushing these younger people towards the criminal justice system and just wait till they trip up, it's a slippery slope from there. The greater exposure to the criminal justice system, the greater the likelihood of reoffending. So we've got to try and do all we can to keep kids, and I'm talking people up to the age of 25, away from prison.
We say that, but I think it was even one of your colleagues at ANU, I think it was Clive Williams, who was on Adam Shirley's program just after the attacks, to say we need more invested in security. There are differing points of view on how the money should be spent to tackle this problem. I mean, some of our texters are saying, is it really a problem? Or, I mean, you see it as a problem?
I see that the fact that we're overstating the problem as a problem. And I think that's we've really got to put it back into perspective. And I would love to do some work at actually putting some statistics to this. And I have seen some small opinion pieces that look at terrorism as what's the chances of being involved in terrorism and what are the real problems. And terrorism's right down there. I mean, really, you're more likely to be knocked over by a car or punched up in the street, or there are all sorts of other issues. And you go out to some of these other areas that are doing it tough, and drugs and alcohol, ICE and again, I'll go back to domestic violence. There's some kids that are really doing it hard, and that they're a real problem. More money put into social services and justice reinvestment is going to be the way to go. More and more security starts to become counterproductive, and people are already feeling the pinch from security. Even if you know, it doesn't take much to go through the airport security internationally or domestically, and you sort of start to feel the pressure of security. Mm. More police on the street. I've obviously hold police in very high regard, but we don't need more.
Mm. Let's look at that, because you've been working in this area for a while. We've only got a few minutes left, but can you tell me what are some of the things that do work? I mean, you've been working in intervention. What are some of the ways that you have been able to, I guess, assist some of these young people?
Well, the first thing I want to say is, unless you've got relationships with community groups, Muslim community groups in this case, unless you've got those relationships, you've got that trust, and you've got nothing. And what we love to develop Western-based solutions. All our solutions to date have been very much risk-based, deficit-based. In other words, we look at kids as a problem. What that does is create stigmatizes kids. It actually contributes to the issues. So we've got to start to look at positive strategies to work with kids, work on their positive aspects, work together with families. We tend to just focus on trying to improve the individual at the end of the day. We've also got to work with the families. We've got to work with the social circle. We've got to work with the communities. Unless we do that, we will get nowhere.
we talked before about some of them coming from criminal pasts or finding their way on the wrong side of the law. Are you able to get into prisons? Are you doing that here in the ACT and other places to try and... Because we are often told that radicalisation can happen in inside the prison system.
Again, I think it's highly overstated. Mm. And we love to put Western perspectives on the way... People have got different ideologies, different belief systems, and because we don't engage communities enough, we don't quite understand those different perspectives. What you and I might call radical is not radical by them, and we've got to start to understand those issues. Prison radicalisation, yeah, sure, it's a problem, but prison radicalisation, I think it's again highly overblown, and prisons are full of a lot of pissed off people.
And I guess this gives them an outlet, which is what we're talking about.
Of course.
In terms of what you're doing, have you got the funding to keep going? Do you think enough investments being made on your end of it?
I used to have a full head of hair, but the stress, of course, has made it all fall out. trying to get funding. Look, funding's not straightforward, and the government has thrown lots of money left, right, and centre. Has it hit the right places? I'm not so sure.